Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hechner, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good. You know, a big trade happened in the NBA over the past 24 hours. A trade that actually had been talked about and pushed out there for quite a while before. Of course, the particulars were, you know, they were never clear at the time. Now we have clarity on them. Pascal Siakam traded from the Toronto Raptors to the Indiana Pacers in exchange for Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, and three first-round picks. Indiana's 2024 first round, the lesser of Utah, Houston, the Clippers, or the Thunder.
The worst. The worst.
Right, yeah, right. The lesser of the worst
right.
of, right?
Right.
Of the picks from those teams for this year. And Indiana's 2026 first-round pick, top four protected. Now, there's another trade going on that involved the Pelicans, Kara Lewis, and I want to say a pick. Also went over to Indiana as part of this deal, I think.
No, Lewis goes to Toronto.
Oh, he goes to Toronto. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, whew, a lot to unpack there, David. First, when you first heard the trade, okay, I know your brain works. Basketball-wise, what are you thinking?
I mean, we had seen this basic deal come out the day before. There's been lots of scuttlebutt. A lot of the people involved are people that I know really well. So, you know, they fill me in when they can. I will tell you this. It was a surprise. Yeah. As much as I thought it might happen any day now, there's no guarantee it would happen. There's lots of moving parts in these kinds of things. I'll mention offhand, as I was just telling you off air, that, I don't know this to be true, but my guess is when you read about a trade the day before it comes out or even the morning of, and it actually happens, which is very rare, mm-hmm. it's because someone in the deal doesn't want to be part of the deal. Otherwise, teams would never do this. Mm-hmm. That's why we didn't know about OG going to the Knicks. Mm-hmm. You know, 50% of the teams involved was the Raptors in both. We don't know about that one because teams don't ever talk about this. They call Woj or Shams, whatever, after the fact. But when it comes out beforehand, it's normally an agent trying to scuttle a deal. So my guess is Bruce Brown Jr., he just got the ring a couple of days ago in Denver with the Pacers, and he's puppy dogs and ice cream, man. This guy's won a championship. He's starting for one of the sexiest teams in sports, and he's playing next to Tyrese. And, I got to go to Toronto, and I got to deal with Quickly and Barnes and RJ Barrett as the main guys in scoring. I mean – they're not bad guys or anything. I think Scotty's a fun guy to play with, but and Toronto's an incredible city, really underrated people, and the NBA rates it just fine. They love him. But yeah, I gotta believe. I know from talking to people in South Indiana, he ain't happy.
Yeah.
And I suspect his people try to scuttle the deal. But so I was surprised that it happened when it did, although it made sense. I don't think Masai could have gotten a better deal than what he got. Why wait? I think Indiana's really good.
Yeah.
Indiana is very interesting. So I wrote an article about it. It's coming out any minute now.
Yeah. I just talked to Henry before. So it'll be out sometime within the hour. And I don't want to spoil all the nuggets in there. So you guys better be subscribed to True Hoop if you want to read that. But we'll talk about some things. I want to look at it from this perspective, David. So obviously Siakam's deal right now expires at the end of the season, making $37 million and change. Using the numbers that we use with Stephen Ilardi, and we calculate what a win costs. I don't know what a win will cost at the end of this season because this season's still happening. So using last year's math of about $3.8 million in change for a win, when you do the math on that, Pascal is roughly a $38 million player, give or take.
Yeah.
So he'll be 30 at the start of this new deal whenever it happens.
Yeah.
But he made All-Star last year and All-NBA 2 years ago, which means Supermax money. Well, that's more than...
Only Supermax if you make it the year you do the deal.
Oh, okay. So, well, that might save them, actually.
Correct. And so I would tell you, I don't project him to get the Supermax, although I think he could be all NBA. I don't think the Pacers will pay it, and he can't get it anywhere else.
Correct.
And so instead you get an option or a trade kicker or fifth year at big money at just a max deal. It's very smart thinking by you. I'm sure the parties have already discussed all these things, just like we think OG's parties did with agent his agent spoke to his dad about the deal he's going to get with New York. Mm-hmm. So my guess is they kind of have that locked in where they are. And the thing about Siakam is, and we write about this, he's been about the same player for the last 5 years while the team has been collapsing around him. Mm-hmm. He's still managed to do his thing, actually get better as a passer. Right. So
you
playing
think,
for this, playing for this joyous place, who lead, you know, he's the best runner in the league, not the fastest. He just runs and runs. He's like a machine. The Pacers run on makes and misses. They're flying all the time. They've got guards that hit ahead to players like him who are pushing. He's happy to pass. I like how that fits.
Okay.
He's better than Bruce Brown Jr. So they basically are for trading. Sure. The other guys they traded weren't really playing, although right. I like Jordan Nora.
Right.
I like him. They he's got to play better defense. I wrote this. He's got to play better defense than what we've seen the last few years. It's hard to have spirit. You know, it's hard to have spirit. The Jazz were the terrible defensive team this year. Now they're winning a bunch of games. They're playing better defense. This goes hand in hand. I think you'll see a better version of him, even what we've seen before. And I think he fits in really, really well with the way, not just the way the team identifies, but also Siakam is not, he doesn't need to be, the spotlight doesn't need to be on him for him to be happy.
Right.
This guy, right. You made a comment about being 30 soon. Maybe he's already 30. I'm not sure.
He turns 30 soon.
Okay. This guy didn't start playing basketball until he was 16.
Correct.
In fact, I was told a really cute story this summer when I was out in L.A. He was out there with the Raptors. And I heard a story. I don't remember who told me. But he didn't want to play basketball because his older brothers all played. Mm. And he thought they were a bunch of idiots. Well, I've got two younger brothers. They think I'm an idiot for sure. Always did. They love me, but they always love to make fun of me. So he's like, I'm playing that stupid sport, basketball. You know, meanwhile, all these guys, I know one of his brothers, they're really tall people because his brother's a coach with the 905 team. So he didn't even play until he was 16. And he wasn't playing AAU. He was playing an outdoor court, you know? Then he went to New Mexico State for a couple of years. Now he's played a bunch of minutes the last few seasons for the Raptors. He's been pretty durable, I think, because he wasn't doing the seven-game every weekend AAU stint since he was nine. Mm-hmm. And then personal training the other 4 days a week and all of that.
Right.
So I think he'll age well. He's a dynamic post-score, really slippery bucket-getter on a team that's desperate for that. And you're going to see, Gerard, when you see the article, I was watching tape. This was a while ago, watching tape, I think on the Warriors, actually. And they were playing the Raptors. And there's a video of Siakam's got the ball just a little above the nail in the middle of the floor. And I mean, four Warriors defenders have like 2 feet in the paint. And one is just a foot off the paint. Five dudes, it's like the Giannis wall. That's what he saw a lot because of the lack of gravity with the other players. Pirtle can't score.
Right.
Foot up with all that. Indiana's just very different.
They
score a lot. They play super fast. Ball moves more. I think it could be a sneaky, super good fit. And this is a team that's done well in the East. They're 2-2 against Boston, 4-1 against Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And this third best record in the East right now without Siakam.
Correct.
That's a pretty dangerous team right there.
And I think he's a Carlisle kind of guy. I think Carlisle will like coaching him and that he'll fit in well there. I also thought, David, what was interesting is how important it was for the Pacers to hold on to Nembhard, Benedict Mathurin, Jairus Walker, Isaiah Jackson, and TJ McConnell, the latter for now, because you know the trade deadline window is still open, and who knows if someone sniffs around for McConnell. But not having to give up the younger players, particularly like Nembhard, I think that's so huge because you can throw out then, particularly if Andrew's a good 3-point shooter. I don't know what he's shooting this year from three, but he's had.
He had a bad start. He's 40% since December 1st. I looked it up to write this article. Okay. Yeah, Nesmith is over 40-plus percent.
So you can throw out a lineup defensively of to protect Halliburton because you want to keep Halliburton on the floor with Nesmith, Nembhard, and Siakam to protect Halliburton, right, because he's got some defensive issues. Although, as we talked about last show, maybe you say, hey, buddy, we don't need you to go that crazy in offense. Maybe you become less of a turnstile on defense, so where they're a little bit better.
I think that you're exactly right. I mentioned in the article that, Harden has this, maybe we said this the other day, but people think of Harden
as this horrible defender.
Yeah. The metrics don't suggest that at all. He picked some bad spots to be caught on tape, not playing defense. He's a way better defender than people realize, certainly in the post. But overall, his metrics are good. Tyrese has been terrible this year. And so, yeah, I think Rick Carlisle, one thing I'll tell you, an insider in Indiana told me he's not afraid to coach anybody. And I said, yeah, he had Dirk, Jason Kidd, and I don't know, Luka. So, yeah. So, been around a long time. Played for the Celtic. Come on. I mean, guy. And so, I think he's going to have to coach Tyrese up. Like, we got help. And this is, I wrote this too. And there's a lot to the article. We wrote a lot. But this was a nod to Tyrese. Like, hey, buddy. Like, settle in, my man. Right? if you have kids, put them to school. Go get snow tires. You know, go get the snow tires you need for the winters here, whatever. Like,
I like it.
You're here. We're doing what we can for you.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do with a player like him. And so they've done that.
On the floor, David, so we would all agree that Boston, Philly, Milwaukee are in some or Boston for sure. I think Boston clearly better than those two. So Boston, the class of the East, I would group.
And Philly, I think you're right.
Okay. And then Milwaukee. Look, and then right after that, it's Cleveland, New York, Indiana. To me, now, okay, Halliburton's still got to come off the hamstring. We haven't seen that yet. He's got to get himself back together. But to me, you're talking about Cleveland and New York. Indy is better than those two teams to me with a ceiling of where they can be.
They've been better this year without Siakam. They made the in-season tournament finals. They beat Milwaukee 4-5, right? They beat Celtics twice. They lost to them by 51 in October, I want to say, and beat them two of the next three times. I think you're right. And the thing about Indiana is there's a little OKC in them. The ages are different with their best player in Halliburton and Siakam being almost 30 and Shea's 26, but Tyrese is 23. But there's a whole bunch of guys still getting better. Jalen Smith is having a breakout season for himself, even as a backup. Nembhard's really starting to shoot it well. Nesmith really shooting it well. Both those guys are plus defenders. Mathurin is coming around. I've not been a fan of Mathurin, but I cannot argue that he has become a better, more willing passer. Still stubborn, wants to shoot a lot of bad shots. Great at getting fouled, which plays well for his overall offensive metrics. He's got to get better. He's been really a disaster defensively too. But Rick's got a chance to coach up Tyrese to say, we cannot win in the postseason if you are one of the worst defenders in the league. We don't need you to carry the offense. We got Pascal now. It's like getting Chris Paul for James Harden. Like, by the way, he's a facilitator too. I was telling someone the other day, when the Pacers, Halliburton and Nembhard are brilliant hit-ahead passers. But there's not a lot of guys on their team that get hit-ahead too. One of them is gone now, Bruce Brown Jr. You can do it with Siakam.
Yep.
You can throw it to him after one step off a rebound, outlet pass. He can push it and make plays. Really one of the better forwards in the league that does it. So there's some real fun things they can do. And with Turner's ability to shoot the three, Jalen Smith probably the backup five to shoot the three. I think Jalen Smith's at 48% this year from three and really looks good. He's limited in some respects defensively, but if he's your backup five, now you got 48 minutes of fives that can shoot. So yeah, Buddy Hield, of course, still on the team.
Yes.
And I wonder, I don't know, are they better off keeping him and TJ McConnell? Because depth matters.
I think so.
They lead the league in bench scoring.
Yeah. And listen, to me, because of where Indiana is right now, I would keep them unless you are blown away with what someone's going to give you in return.
Right.
Which could happen.
Which probably is not going to be the case. And that's why let's get back to your original question. What's your point of keeping those young guys? This is where the Raptors fucked up not extending Siakam when they could have. Because if they extend him in the summer, which I understand why they didn't, and I'm happy to discuss it if you want, or they extend him in December when it looked like, okay, he can play in this system too, you're going to get better offers because teams know he's going to play for us. He's not the type that's going to pull a Harden or an AD or even Dame, like, I'm done playing for you guys.
Right.
It's just not his personality. He's more respectful of the situation, and nothing against those players, because player empowerment, do what you want to do, it's fine. But he's not going to do that. Well, now you can't ask Indiana to give up that.
Right.
There's no guarantee they're going to keep. Even if they have an agreement, wink, wink, agreement.
Right.
And Anna, there's no contract.
Right.
But I promise you, as of even yesterday, I was talking to teams who are saying owners don't trust those situations. Because the player can say, fuck you. Yeah. The team can say to the player, fuck you. This is what happened. Things have changed.
Yep.
Kevin Durant's, Steph Curry's, the world's, the top five players in the league, can get hurt and still get their max deals. Not everyone else can necessarily say that. Mm-hmm. And teams can always wiggle out of stuff too.
Sure.
So you can't ask the Pacers for, Masai can't ask for much more.
Right.
Because they can't be guaranteed Siakam's going to stay because he didn't have the extension signed.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think back to our point about keeping McConnell and Mathurin, particularly because of where they are right now, look, in the playoffs, one of the big things that teams struggle with in the playoffs, and you know, we always know minutes go up and all that, but maybe your minutes don't have to go up, right? So, so in those minutes that Halliburton is off the floor, maybe they're necessary. Maybe this is a model where you have him not playing 39, 40 minutes a night. He's playing 35, 36. And in those 3 to 4 minutes, you have McConnell and Mathurin. You're able to maintain because those guys can get into good offense and score.
And Buddy.
And Buddy, yeah, right. Buddy, exactly. That's huge. Yeah. So to me, look, I'm not saying, because one of the things you like to talk about is experience, that still matters and you have to go through it, right? You can't coach age. You are how old you are and you'll learn over time. But what does Pascal do to the overall quotient of that locker room who's devoid of playoff experience?
All right, so I want to finish the other thought because I really like the things you said about those young guys. Mm-hmm. So just imagine Masai. I'm guessing it's Masai. It might be the GM, Bobby Webster, I think. Mm-hmm. Talking to Kevin Pritchard or whomever for Indiana, and like, okay, we want Siakam. Who do you want from us? And they start going down the list. Indiana, there's no one else who has the guaranteed cap space Indiana does that would want someone like Pascal. So there's already a marriage that seemed to make sense. Well, you know, Masai's starting to go down the list. Well, we'll take Jairus Walker.
Right.
Right? We'll take Andrew Nembhard. Nah.
Right.
Ben Mathurin. Nah. Jordan Nwora. Okay.
Right.
Hey, Bruce Brown was a given, him or a buddy, because of the money.
Right.
He had to have that because they're 20-plus million plus each. So, so he's Jordan Nwora they said yes to. So, by the way, I like Kyra Lewis.
Yeah.
He's not been good for New Orleans. But super talented kid coming out of college, mm-hmm. super fast, athletic guard, like quickly, built differently, but like him, fast speed-wise. So on the other thing, yeah, so the Pacers signed Bruce Brown Jr. He's got the championship pedigree, which does carry some weight. It does, he played, it went like he set the bench.
Right.
He was a key sixth man for them. Siakam had even a bigger role mm-hmm. against the Warriors to knock that team off. I think that he's got a gravitas to him. He's a very serious guy. He doesn't need a lot of limelight, but he's very serious about his craft. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've seen him in LA too, in Orlando training some. He's gonna go about his business, and he's better than any of those guys have played with since, other than if they played with Paul George.
Yep.
So I think Miles may have played for Paul George when he was younger.
Maybe
a year or two. I don't remember anymore, but I think so. And so he's a hell of a player. He was much younger. It's going to be a good vibe. I was talking to a Pacers coach recently, maybe almost a week ago, and they said, like, it's just, we got a lot of joy going on in here. We're playing the right way. Our guys are starting to figure it out. Yeah.
I think this team, before the trade, I was pretty confident they'd finish top six and make the actual playoffs, not play in. And then we'd see from there. David, I think if things match up right the way they play, it wouldn't shock me if they got to the conference finals.
Right. So I wrote about that too. So I think that's their upside. Boston's a better team.
Of course.
They beat them twice now. Mm-hmm. Two of the last three. I'm reminded of the Atlanta Trae Young team from a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Tyrese is that kind of offensive talent.
He sure is.
They've got a lot of good pieces. Young guys are getting better. Not just Tyrese, but all the guys must be like, you know, man, we're going for it. Like, I feel bad for Obi Toppin. He's got Jairus Walker behind him and Siakam mm-hmm. in front of him. But he's, I didn't even mention it. He's shooting 40% from three lately. He's playing really well. And so if I knew Obi, I don't, it'd be like, you know what? Kill it in the role you have. And then we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. Just play great in the role you have and good things will happen when you're winning games. Other teams are attracted. You're more attractive to other teams.
No doubt.
So they have a lot. They're on a West Coast trip. They've lost to Utah and Denver. They played great against Denver. Lost a great game. Utah smoked them. But Tyrese didn't play either. Nesmith didn't play in that game.
Right.
Might have been another guy out too. So tonight they play Sacramento. And they got Portland and Phoenix. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they got some tough games ahead. But they're, I think, 20-11 in the Eastern Conference. And when Siakam joins a team somewhere on this road trip, it looks like, yeah, I think they're an interesting team to watch. They're going to be, they have a chance to be top four in the East.
They were already a league pass team and a super fun team to start the season. And now there's actual belief about what they can be in terms of the ceiling, which is super exciting and great for, you know me, I don't care about, you know, small market, whatever, but great for the fans of Indiana and the people that are watching that team. David, just quickly on the Raptors side, you know, well, it's clear, right? The rebuild is on. And, you know, what are the Raptors looking to do here? I mean, it seems like with this kind of glutton of similar type players now making the playoffs, probably not what they want to do this year. Maybe they want to bottom out and really start that rebuild and see what they have with all the pieces they brought in.
I mean, they're too good to bottom out. And there's five teams, I think, that pretty much have a lock on the bottom six. They lose their bottom six. They lose their – if they don't finish in the top six in the draft, they lose it.
Oh,
That's my understanding. They've got to finish in the bottom six. They just beat the doors off Miami last night without Siakam. And OG obviously has been gone for 3 weeks. They're going to build around Scottie and, I don't know, quickly, they've got to sign this offseason.
Right.
RJ Barrett has some years left, is playing great. He and Scottie played well last night. That is not something that's happened a lot since they've been together. It's both guys playing great. There's no reason why they both can't play great, though. And so I think it's, I'm one of those guys who thinks you can be in the middle of the road, get a couple of things happen, and then jump up top. You need to have a breakout player. Well, Utah's doing that with Lauri Markkanen right now.
Mm-hmm.
Scottie Barnes continues to make a jump, which he's gone down a little bit in reality since RJ got there. Last night was a positive for both players. If Scottie becomes a top 15, top 20 player in the league, RJ Barrett ascends to being a solid, you know, guard. Jonathan Quickley shoots 42% from three, manages his turnovers, gets some, six or seven assists a game. All right, they're working. I don't know what they do with Jakob Poeltl. Mm-hmm. I don't love his fit there. He's solid, but they've got to get better. They don't have any great picks unless they finish the bottom six, and they lose their pick if they don't. So the Indiana's picks aren't going to be very good.
Nope.
And the pick they get from probably the Clippers is they get the worst. So OKC or the Clippers is going to be 27, 28, 29, or 30. So Tom Habster wrote a good article today about the value of first-round picks. When you see first-round picks, you shouldn't be thinking, ooh, Wemby Zion.
Right, yeah. You got to see where, yeah.
Yeah, it's more likely going to be an unlikely all-star drafted in the 20s. It's just not many.
Right.
And so it's about player development. We'll see how they do. But, it's a new day in Toronto for sure. There's no one connected to the championship except for Chris Boucher, who comes off the bench.
Yeah, no. But – the first big move we saw, or the second big move, right? OG went to the Knicks. So, we're likely to see some more moves. You mentioned Utah. Now with them playing well, I don't know what Danny wants to do. My guess is he wants to be on the Sam Presti plan, which is make his runway as long as possible and keep selling his own. So if that is the case, he wants to accumulate more draft capital. Well, how do you do that? Well, Lauri Markkanen is extremely attractive. And again, like Pascal, although he's only making $18 million, and that's not even all guaranteed.
For a year and a half.
Right. It's not even all guaranteed next year, which is great.
Yeah.
That's the player who's going to bring you. I mean, it will be, but that's the player that anybody who's very good, that's who you want, because he's going to now bump you over the top. Oklahoma City, hello. We talked about them before. So we'll see if they do that. But they're playing well now, so I don't know if Danny decides to go that route or not.
So, real quick on Utah. I watch I don't know. I probably send out on an average of 75 to 200 clips a day to players and coaches, whatever, somewhere around there. The most exciting player I've seen, I'll say exciting players in this last week, has been Lauri Markkanen and Colin Sexton.
Mm.
Fucking unbelievable. I talked to an NBA player last night who's so impressed with Sexton. He's like, his downhill speed, he's bigger than you think. His body is stronger than you think.
Yeah.
Really shoots the three. He and Markkanen are terrific together. So I even wrote Markkanen to OKC. But if Danny is thinking, I'm going to partner these two guys up, super fast three-point shooter who isn't like Jordan Poole, though maybe Jordan Poole can, you know, kind of find himself again when he's, you know, he's not on the Warriors getting punched in the head and all of that. He was super valuable for Golden State. If I get those two guys, I get Walker Kessler playing better on offense because he's a good, he's still an elite defensive player. Yeah, maybe, maybe something good can happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know that he'll be bugging out.
Yeah,
you know, he may not be bugging out anymore. You know,
he might not. No, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Okay, David, there was an interesting game that happened. We normally don't talk about games, but we had to talk about this one because it was crazy. On Tuesday night, the Phoenix Suns, Sacramento Kings. Phoenix looked dead for 3.5 quarters. The Kings were up 22 points. And here's an interesting stat. According to the Associated Press, teams facing deficits of 22 points or more in the fourth quarter were 0-1,244 since August 23rd, 2020.
Timeout. Can you please say that again?
Yes, I will repeat that again.
I need to hear it.
Teams facing deficits of 22 points or more in the fourth quarter were 0-1,244 since August 23rd, 2020. Until now.
Wow.
The Phoenix Suns.
Wow.
Had a hell of a comeback and won that game. Now, David, when you have a comeback like that, it ain't never about one thing, right? Sacramento had to help them a ton give that game away. Because you're up 22, right? How do you lose a game when you're up 22? But I said to myself, I might have seen some things perhaps that Phoenix can maybe use and say, okay, if we can do this, that we did this these three play sequence that we had here in the fourth, if we can do more of that, we can be a better team than we are now. So I asked David to watch the fourth quarter and tell me what he saw from that game.
Well, I saw the Kings commit 4 illegal screens in the quarter. That's never a good thing. Mm-hmm. They missed some shots they don't typically miss. Malik Monk had a pretty bad turnover late in the game. I like Malik Monk, but he had a bad turnover. Some terrible defensive possessions by the Kings. So all that being said, because those things happen in games all the time.
Sure.
I mean, they played Kevin Durant at the five. They played him at the five. And Sabonis had nothing for him.
Didn't.
That's Didn't. A, I you know, it, watching that game, I wouldn't have watched it if you didn't tell me to watch it. The appreciation I have for Kevin Durant is just enormous. He is, we always say, you know, these guys are just fucking jokes.
Yeah.
Like Durant's talent is just so extraordinary. Offensively, we all know, but I mean, Sabonis, I think he scored once or twice. One, maybe Kevin was helping, but it wasn't like he was just going to get buckets again. Durant was like, you're my little brother. You're not just going to bully me to your left hand. Oh, what a surprise, DeMontis. You want to go to your left hand? I've seen that video before. I played with you on 2K. That's what it looked like. You know, KD was just like, come on, bro. And then just really staggering talent. He had a nice transition dunk that made me think, man, he looks like he's in his 20s. Mm-hmm. Beal had a passionate dunk in transition on someone. Booker, it all started. I don't know if it was the 22 points at that point, but there was a transition play for the Kings, and Booker raced back and got a steal on the opposite baseline from his basket. That was really nice. They've got a bunch of ballers on their team. They do.
Yeah.
They also have some non-ballers, but those ballers are pretty special. You know, are they going to – they can't play him only at the five. No. He'll wear down.
Oh, of course not.
So they got to pick their spots. But I tell you what, thanks to this game, if the Suns don't ever want to get down like that, but if they're down 12 with 8 to play
– that's going to fall out of their sleep. KD at the five, we go small.
We're good, yeah.
Yeah.
After coming down 22 against a good team.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been that year, kind of year for Sacramento. You just can't get out of their own way a little bit. Mm-hmm. They're good. They're a good team. Very good.
I mean, they looked awesome for 3.5 quarters. I was like, Jesus, they're making everything.
Phoenix was just kind of lifeless, and then they just started making shots. Eric Gordon hit two big ones.
He had two big threes.
Eric Gordon, back-to-back threes that were really big.
Yep. Durant hit one, Gordon hit back-to-back, and Durant hit another. Look, what I saw too, David, was, you know, and Draymond says this, a lot of players say this, playing defense sometimes is just about effort. And honestly, in 3.5 quarters, I saw no effort from the Suns on defense. And once they got that turnover, I think it was one of the moving screens that got called on Booker. And I was like, oh, and Josh Okogie came in. They actually put together 4 straight plays where they gave effort. And I'm like, guys, I mean, to me, I know the season's long and they're old. Is it that hard to give effort? Right? Like, and maybe it is. You tell me, right? Like, I'm like, you're giving effort and things are working better for you when you give effort on defensive side of the ball.
All right. So There's only one college team I really love, as you know. And that team, I'm very proud to say, has won 5 straight ACC games. My son's team at Florida State, they had a huge win last night at Miami. And my son was on, he was texting me after the game. They led wire to wire. They never trailed the whole game. In fact, and I mean this, in 5 ACC games, not that the ACC is the right. old ACC. Mm-hmm. It's not so good right now. And they haven't played Duke in that
run. Or Carolina yet. They play Carolina yet?
They played Carolina before the run. They lost. They were up 15, up 14 in the second half and lost on the road. But yeah, Florida State's been playing better. But my son texted me, a very magical phrase, like, we just played really hard again. And it's no small thing. Do you remember way back in the day when Grit and Grind first happened, mm-hmm. I thought Lionel Hollins was best talent. I never liked Lionel Hollins because I fucking hated the Sixers. you don't remember this, but I remember him playing for the Sixers because I was a Lakers fan. Mm-hmm. And but he fucking got his guys to compete. And Memphis just outplayed you. There is coaches, and I've only coached 8,000 high school games. There are some coaches who X and O wise I smoke. But man, he gets these guys to play so hard. Makes a difference. Yeah. I also did. So that helped my team a lot. I think it makes a big difference at every level, including this one. Just real all these guys compete.
Right.
The problem is when you're just competing, lowercase, but they're competing mm-hmm. uppercase, you're in trouble. You better have to make some threes. And what happens sometimes is teams wait for that fire to start because they got hot or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mistake, mm-hmm. typically. Mm-hmm. Phoenix got lucky. Clearly got lucky. Look at the odds. Mm-hmm. It's not a strategy.
Clearly.
Not a strategy to say, hey, we're going to be fine. Let's just coast all these games. We'll turn on when we need to. No, you won't. The West is too good for that. Right. The league is too good for that. Yeah. But I'm hoping this gets them kind of organized and kind of behind that thought of let's just compete much, much harder.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and the Durant at the 5 thing I thought was great because, again, using his length. And, you know, he said, look, DeMontis is going to try to use physicality on me, but I'm long, right? So it's how do I use that to.
And super smart, right. super experienced.
To combat this guy's him, right?
Seen it all, man.
Push him out further on his catches. And it looked like, I was like, DeMontis, you forget how to play basketball in that 2-minute stretch? Like, what the hell happened? Well, this guy all of a sudden started guarding me with his derangular arms. And I was like, what the fuck?
I always say this about guys like Harden and Durant. I've said this on the show before. I'm sorry to do it again. But the other night, I don't watch football anymore. The Buccaneers beat. I will watch Sunday. It's the anniversary of 2-year anniversary of my dad's death. Mm-hmm. He was a huge Buccaneers fan since they started in 76. So I think one of my brothers isn't going to go to watch it at my mom's house. I couldn't tell you. I know the names of 2 players on the team, maybe 3.
Oh, but it's playoffs, so this matters. So it'll be, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know my mom wants to win because she wants to think of my dad watching the game somewhere, you know, as if he's that's what you're doing when you're dead. But whatever, I hope. And so anyway, I've been saying for years, they had a guy named Tom Brady on their team. And how much knowledge did he impart to everyone he talked to, you know? Offensive line learned more than anyone, but I'm sure everyone learned stuff from this guy.
Yeah.
They beat the Eagles' brains in. Now, if Philly, I guess, wasn't playing as well as they were in the year, whatever. Like, this team is, once again, surprising you. Kevin Durant has so much knowledge. It's unfortunate there's not a lot of young guys on the team that can learn from it. Right. Booker has a lot, too, correct. Already. Mm-hmm. But Durant still knows more. I mean, he knows as much as any coach, really. He knows as much as any coach. And sometimes probably better. Because he probably thinks of it faster. He's a super quick processor, has seen it all. And he's just the antidote. It's really what his nickname should have been. The antidote. Because he's got the antidote he's got the fix for any poison you got, man.
Pretty much.
He's just got it. He's just got it. Yeah.
No, nothing he can't do. That was crazy. You know, you watch the ESPN probability. I'm like, they were 99-point something percent probability of winning.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then it went off the cliff. I was like, that never happens. Yeah.
Yeah. They just kept reeling him in. That's how it happens.
Yeah.
And the Kings just kind of self-destructed.
Pretty much.
Without panicking so much, some of it was bad luck. But they got tagged. Yeah,
sure did.
That's got to leave a mark for them a little bit, I think.
For sure. All right, guys, we'll be back after this brief commercial break. Okay, David, one of the interesting things about the NBA is rookies and when they come into the league because, you know, they've never done this kind of 82-game schedule that doesn't exist anywhere else but in the NBA. Even playing pros in France is not like this, right?
No.
It's a very different thing. People always talk about the rookie wall and these various things and peaks and valleys. I mean, that's what it is, right? Nothing's linear. And early in the season, if you looked at EPM for Victor Wembanyama, he started out pretty okay. He was up, but then like really cratered and was a minus player for a chunk of the season. And I was just looking around and kind of doing some research on him. And thanks to Taylor Snar's awesome chart, since November 22nd, he's played 21 games, and only 4 of those games, David, has he had negative EPM. And I was like, oh man, like he may be
fit. Well, they moved him to center.
Well, and it coincided with his move to center, which is probably what we thought he should always play, but I'm sure there was a method to their madness, right? Of not
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I figured they didn't want to beat him up early and they're like, let's save you.
I don't know.
I'm guessing. I don't know. A complete guess from me. I don't know.
I am talking to people about that now. Like what were they doing? Why are you trying to lose on purpose? They put Jeremy Sochan at the one, Sochan, whatever
right,
it is.
Right.
What is it?
I think it's Sochan. Yeah. I think it's Sochan, so but it could be Sochan. Whatever.
Jeremy's at the one. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
Victor at the five. That was a mistake. But
or at the four.
You should have known going in.
Yeah.
I mean, the four, right. So they moved Victor at the five, and I've been watching the games recently. Holy hell. Jesus. Is he good?
All of a sudden, David, his numbers, so his per 36 numbers since being moved, he went from 22.6 points a game to 27.8. From 11.6 rebounds to 15, from 3 assists to almost 5, from 3 blocks to 5.2. Oh, and his shooting's gone up too.
Is he leading the league in block shots?
Yeah, yes.
I talked to one of his teammates who predicted that this summer. He's going to lead the league in block shots.
He has, I mean, the problem is they stink, so he won't get it. He has a DPOI case. Like, I mean, you can make it. The problem is they're fucking terrible as a team, so it doesn't really matter. And look, you said this. Generational talent. I mean, if he stays healthy, development happens, this is going to be, he's going to end his career as one of the all-time greats. And I mean, and you're seeing it. And David, he's still, even though his shooting percentage has gotten better, he's still not a, what you would call, I know for sure, a, not even a good shooter yet. Forget about great.
What is he, 29% from three?
I'll get up to 31% now. I think he's up over 30. I think, yeah.
Okay, that's progress. He was below before. So, we're not seeing... Like, we were just about Kevin Durant. How old is Kevin Durant?
35. Durant,
I don't know. Okay. Right. And Victor's 19. So let's just split the difference. Like, just imagine when he gets to that point in his career, you know, how smart he's going to be. He's a hooper, man. He loves basketball. He loves to work. He loves to train. He loves to play. Yeah, he's super special. Really. I didn't tell you to put it in the document, but I was going to put it in because I watched 2 of his last games. Just really, I was thinking to myself, he was in Boston last night. Boston.
Yep.
Please and I just thought to myself, boy, those Celtics fans, you know, good for them. Because they're going to be able to think down the road. Man, I saw this dude as a rookie when he's dominating the world. Yeah.
You know, you talked about before he even came to the league, the ways he would get some easy buckets. And early in the year, that wasn't happening for a variety of reasons. Players not able to find him, whatever. Now, because and I'm seeing it, his stat lines are looking more efficient. He's getting so many of these easier buckets now. These quick leak outs, they realize no pass is too high for him now. Just throw it high and he'll get to it.
He's got hands. He's got feel. He just has a feel for scoring. There's lots of players that are not natural scorers. The Bulls are having success right now with Pat Williams, their former number 4 pick, I want to say 4 years ago. This is 4th year, I think. He's not a natural scorer. He has kind of learned on the fly. I think Wemby already learned it before he got here. So this is a dude that he could lead the league. Let me rephrase this. I would not be surprised if he leads the league 1 year in points, rebounds, and blocks.
I mean, yeah. I mean, how many games has he played where he's been the number one scorer, rebounder, and block shot guy? Like, I could see it for sure.
And then no one that's ever done that before, of which it's a very few number of people anyway, are going to be able to potentially have the number of 3 that he's going to have.
That's correct. Because I bet they didn't keep block stats by that. But I bet Wilt and Kareem did it a bunch of times, but they didn't keep blocks back then, so we wouldn't know. And none of them shot 3s. Right. So, you know.
Right.
That's what
they shot him. They didn't make them. they had trouble making. Bill had trouble making 2s.
If you had to give Rookie of the Year now, you'd still say it's Chet, right?
I would say that I don't have to give him Rookie of the Year now. Yes, you're right. But didn't you think the same thing I think, which is that award's not over yet?
It's not. And I will say this. It's whatever. It's only a 10-game sample. But Chet, over the last 10 games, David, 7 negative EPM games.
And he's not just, playing as well.
And it's just, look, it's
peaks. It's hard. It's a hard league, right, man.
It's fucking peaks and valleys, and it's the NBA. Like, what the hell? Like, you're going to have.
I say this all the time. I've told you the story before. When I'm coaching on the floor with players, I have to warn them all the time. Because I'm on the court. I'm mixing it up. I've been doing this for so long. It's natural for me. I kind of know my way around the court with players on it. But it used to be, I mean, I played myself when I was in high school in a million pickup games. And I don't mind a little contact, whatever. But now, I'm almost 59 now.
Mr. Potato Head.
I'm Mr. Potato Head. Yeah, here goes the eyebrows, the ears, whatever. But these guys are, these are boys. I don't mean
know what you mean.
Chet, yeah, and Victor.
I know what you mean.
All these young players are almost like boys. I certainly wasn't 19, 20 compared to how I grew up against fucking men, man. I remember being at L.A., and seeing a lot of these young players, the guy that just got drafted, guys that got drafted the year before, because the Sixers were there and the Raptors were there, but a lot of players come to LA to play, to train, and then they go play pickup in the afternoons at UCLA. And a lot of them take their shirts off as they leave. And when the men, like Serge Ibaka, had the best body of anybody. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like over time, you cultivate that physique and whatever. And the kids, the young guys are just, I mean, look at Giannis now compared to a night, you know? So it's hard against for these rookies to play against these fucking men.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
Yeah.
And they're smart as fuck and dedicated. It's just, yeah, it's just, it's a challenging league.
It is.
And you're not getting a lot of help. I talked to a player, and I don't mean this in a good way, but it's just the reality. I talked to a player the other day who I thought played really well, really hard, really well. I said, any feedback from your coaches? And this was on the phone. This is not a text. He said, nah, I never get feedback from them. And this was a time where you got pat up. This would have been, young man, you did really well.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, yeah. It doesn't never happen because it does happen right. Some. It just doesn't happen nearly enough. I don't think our coaches today recognize. That's why I've been saying, one of the reasons why I've been saying we need more women coaching. I think women more naturally have, for whatever reason, the ability to recognize that that touch, whether it's a verbal or not, can carry weight on someone that needs it. I will tell you, and you know this more than me because you're living in New York, a lot of these players haven't seen sunshine in a long time. It is a dark time. Mm-hmm. Guys lose their minds a little bit.
Yeah.
And some of them turn to alcohol and whatever. Like, it's just a tough time to be an NBA player right now.
It is.
You're right at a month away from the break.
Yes. And they need it desperately now. They like,
yeah. So any positive feedback you can give them, I think is really smart to do. And a lot of guys just, they don't need it. They're tough. No, they're not. No, they're not.
David, it's something that you've said a million times, something that I implemented in my coaching and without even knowing that this is what you said. We are first in the business to inspire. And like, that's, yes, it doesn't matter that they make $40 million a year or whatever the fuck it is. Like, these are still people who need inspiration. And that is jobs. That's our jobs as coaches, right? Is to inspire and, hey, man, great game, or great practice, or whatever it was, man. Like, just, you know,
yeah,
love them up a little bit.
Right. That's what I think too.
Some sad news, David. Golden State Warriors assistant coach, Dejan Miljevic, he died, say, yesterday at the age of 46. The Warriors were in Utah for a game. The game actually got postponed, and it had gotten postponed before they even announced that he had died. He suffered a heart attack, I believe, at a team dinner, was rushed to the hospital, and obviously being mourned all over the NBA community. He is Serbian. He was a player, a very good player, became a coach. It had so much impact on, obviously, Warriors players. Also, Nikola Jokic, two-time MVP. Of course, everybody knows, native of Serbia. Bojan Bogdanovic, a couple other players talked about him as well. Boban, so many guys. Luka, like, so many guys.
Darko. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the Raptors.
Head coach of the Raptors. So many players get touched. He leaves behind a wife, and I want to say at least one child, possibly two. David, 46, that's me. Like, that is young. And just very, very sad, and condolences to him, his families, and the Warriors organization.
He's sick. Yeah. I didn't used to be mindful of these kinds of things when I was younger. I just was stupid boy. I lost my dad. I'm going to be 60 in a year and a month now. And At 46, yeah. I mean, my kids were 10 years old. Like, I was just, I feel like I just started living, you know, had a couple of dollars in the bank and had some kids and I just had a good life. It's, yeah, it's just hard. It's hard to get your arms around what happened. And I'm really glad they canceled the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was smart. No need
and to. And it was at the team dinner. I mean, I don't know. They need to get a therapist in there.
You know, that's going to affect those players for sure. I mean, we just talked about before, first one in the business to inspire. This is going to affect these guys. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. We rail against the macho culture of sports. Like, all of it is just stupid and performative. Like, these are human beings. And in the NBA, this is a small, elite fraternity. Very few people have played and or coached in the NBA. And that list ain't long, okay? And when these guys travel all season together, there are bonds and closeness. This is like family. It's like a second family in many ways. In some cases, your primary family. And it's really a rough situation to go through. So again, you know, condolences to everybody in the organization. Hopefully the Warriors will do the right thing, get the right guys in there and have the right support system in place for his family as well.
Yeah. We see these people as celebrities or as athletes and coaches and as if they're not just regular people. Right. I had a situation. I have a partner in a business of mine. Who's one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet. His name is Pete, really great guy. And in every respect, but he's only now starting to spend more time with my NBA players. And he's a fan. He was a very good player himself many years ago, played professionally. And one of my players, you know, something happened with my play, it wasn't good. And one of my NBA guys and Pete texted me like a tweet about the player not playing well, whatever. And I called him and I said, if you want to be in the business that I'm in, then the first thing you need to do is say, hey, coach, how you doing? Because these guys are like family to me. I'm talking to these players 4 or 5 days a week and I'm texting with them and their families and their agents. And like, you can't just fucking send me a headline and think I'm just going to comment on something as if I'm just another dude in the barbershop or on SportsCenter just talking stupid shit.
Right.
Like, these guys matter, you know? And he felt terribly. And I said, I wasn't a jerk. I didn't handle it as bad as probably that sounded. But I just told him, you know, the biggest heart, you know, he has a bigger heart than me. Show it. Mm-hmm. Like, the first thing I do when anything bad happens to a player is if I know their agent, I text or call the agent. Mm-hmm. How you doing? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm no great person. I don't have that big of a heart. But that's decency. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, let's at least do that, right? Mm-hmm. And, so... all those players who watched, even if they thought he was a bad coach, no one wants to see someone die in front of them.
Correct.
Like the fear and the sadness and the scared. And to your point, because you kind of said this before a little bit, like if you're the Warriors, like, oh my God, you know, we had the punch. And, you know, since the championship, we had the punch. And then we Wiggins is playing terribly. I heard something happened with a Warriors, like a major health issue. I thought it was Wiggins' dad.
Oh, you thought, okay.
I had no idea what it was. Yeah. And now we have a guy die. Yeah. Like, I got to think, what's next? Like, they're fucking on a cursed train. Yeah.
You know, and look,
hopefully.
And I don't believe in that kind of thing, but David, this is life, right? And as you always say, it's not always puppy dogs and ice cream, right? It's life has got peaks and valleys.
Slog, man.
And so, maybe there's in a valley right now, right? This is just where it is right now. And, you know,
I was just going to say, I hope you're right. I hope that his passing somehow can get them to say, it can't get worse than this. This is horrible. And give him, galvanize them to win for him a little bit.
Something.
You know, he might, I don't know him. I heard people say great things about him.
They've all said great things about him. Yeah. Yeah.
maybe his memory will be like, let's fucking do it for this guy. And that'd be amazing. Wouldn't that be great? It'd be great for his widow, you know?
Couple quick news notes. The police in Newport Beach, California have concluded their investigation and no charges will be filed against Josh Giddey. Which means I imagine the NBA is not going to do much either because he's been playing this whole time. Right?
No, so, you're not imagining anything.
Right, so if the police found nothing, what's the NBA going to say, right? So that
the NBA has already closed the book, locked it, and put it into a shelf.
So that is what it is.
And locked the shelf.
Yeah. And Amazon... has invested in the Diamond RSNs, the group that was facing bankruptcy that owns all those 13 RSNs. Yeah, they have infused some money into that part of their bankruptcy plea. It's a lot more complicated stuff, guys. Read the Wall Street Journal to get the particulars if you care about the financial details. Point being is that those RSNs that had a bunch of NBA, MLB, and NHL teams that they would broadcast their games on Bally will now be saved. This is also, and it stops those individual leagues, the MLB, NHL, and NBA, from taking over distribution of those games.
Oh, right.
What that means, of course, is that, if surprise, surprise, if nobody's seen the writing on the wall, right, Amazon is moving full-fledged into this port of content creation. And because of the money they have behind them, you know, when this all does settle, because not all these streamers are going to survive, because it's just going to become, this is what capitalism does, right? They're going to cannibalize and eat each other, and Netflix will probably be one of the ones left standing because of their longevity and their history, because they were the first. Apple and Amazon have the most money. So they're probably going to be the only, what? Everybody else is probably going to be by the wayside, is my guess going forward.
I don't know enough, but I'm enjoying the show Reacher when I do my role.
Amazon does have a great content studio. They put out some really good stuff.
Do they?
Yeah,
I've never seen much, but
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I watched House of Cards back in the day.
Oh, yeah. They put out a lot of good stuff. Netflix does. And look, all these streamers really, you know, there's really good television out there right now, guys. Yeah. All right, David. It is our time of the week for top five. Number five, what do you got?
I am going with the defending world champs, who I watched play the other night and was really inspired by how they play defense. They're not playing great right now, but that effort gave me some hope that they're going to be fine. Number five.
We think so much alike, but of course I also cheated. So yes, I have the Nuggets on the line as five. And just because I still can't completely kick them out of the top five yet, even though they're not playing great right now, the OKC Thunder are still in my top five on that five line with the Denver Nuggets.
I put them at four.
Okay. I put the Wolves at four.
The Wolves fans must think, Wolves fans must think I hate them. In years past, they have. First of all, I'm friends with him, their color commentator. I trained his son when he left Northwestern and became a pro. I love Jim. And I grew up a Vikings fan, for crying out loud. Chuck Foreman was my favorite player. Frank Tarkenton, I love. So, Purple People Eaters. I love Minneapolis. I love Minnesota. My extra neighbors are from Minneapolis.
Listen, the Wolves are what they are.
I just don't trust them.
We saw enough reason to not trust them recently, so yeah. I get it.
they were number six for me. Okay. I thought about putting them even with Denver. But I'm going to put Denver on their own thing.
So we probably have the same top
Sixers,
three.
I have the Sixers.
Sixers at three. Clippers at two.
Yes.
Listen, I'm on the Clippers train, and Celtics, of course,
at one. Yeah, Boston is a joke. I talked to a player the other in the last week or so. I talked to a player. They played Boston, and he said, man, they're just incredible.
Yeah,
like, they're tough right now. They don't miss shots. I'm like, yeah, I said, how they miss? He's like, I'm not sure they miss. Yeah, they're tough right now. Role players are tough. The starters are great. They got to go out.
Look, for the Clippers, what I hope for them is health. I would love to see this team be fully healthy in the postseason, because they present a unique set of problems that, look, I know they're going to have a Jokic problem, but they're going to have a Kawhi, PG, James Harden problem on the other end, right? So that would be fun. So,
If we could have a Denver, Clippers, Thunder, or Minnesota, one of those, a Final Four, it would be great to see.
I think so. Right?
Phoenix can have their say at some point, maybe.
Yeah.
We don't know. I don't think the Warriors, I don't think the Lakers, probably not anyway, but I want the Clippers and Denver to be there.
That would be a matchup, man. You get some, not a ton, but Reggie Jackson against his former team. A little spice there, a little bit. All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend, enjoy the basketball, and we will see you on Monday. Take care.